What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. This is the Sports Ethos Grizzlies podcast. I'm stumbling a little bit because I generally say this is David and Isaac, but Isaac is not with me today. I've got a special guest, Mr. Corbin Ford. I don't even know what to say you're from, man. I know that he does the Round Ball Ramble, and he has a Phoenix Mercury podcast, and he's everywhere, man. He's all over the place. We're going to jump into some draft stuff. We're going to talk to Corbin about some guys that he likes for the Grizzlies in that 20 to 29 range. But before we get into any of that, we're going to talk about our top five and see what the differences are. Argue about people, yell at each other, scream at each other, whatever it takes. We're going to get through and make it happen. Corbin, how have you been, man?
David, I'm doing just fine. Thank you for having me on. Pumped to be here. We're getting down to one of my favorite times of the year. I think the anticipation of when the season starts is always big for me. But just when you're to the offseason, it's like, you know, the general manager in my head, you know, between the draft and free agency and trades is always cooking up stuff. So this is fun for me, even as the season's ending and there's some sadness there. But I'm pumped, man. I'm excited just to talk hoops as always.
So, man, let's jump straight into draft stuff here. You're the Orlando Magic. You're on the clock, number one. You've got 746 guards on your team, so you know that Jaden Ivey is not going to be the number one overall pick. Who are you taking? Who's number one for you if you're the GM of the Orlando Magic?
Oh, man, you know, this is there's so much smoke screens and all this stuff out there. I hate to be anticlimactic, but if I am the Orlando Magic, I'm looking at Jabari Smith Jr. And I'm looking at him because, like you said, we have 1,800 guards in Orlando. Okay, we really got like five. But the point being, all of them, whether it's Jalen Suggs or Markel Fultz or Cole Anthony, you know, you have RJ Hampton, young guy over there as well. Like, all of them need to have the ball in their hands to some extent, right? You have Chuma Okeke, you have other guys as well. Well, they had to make a decision on Mo Bamba, but Wendell Carter Jr. at the big spot as well. So, like, if you bring guys in, and Chet Holmgren is a guy we can talk about for sure, and he's nice. He's a solid fit on defensive end, but I think that you need someone that's going to, like, unlock some of these guards' potential. And, yes, Chet is a great passer. Chet's a solid shooter, and we know what he can do on the defensive end. But right now, you go from a solid shooter, arguably one of the best in this draft class, arguably the best. He's already one of the best in this draft class, in Jabari Smith Jr., who not only fits the bill being a very good shooter, a solid scorer off the dribble if it's like two to three dribbles, a solid rebounder, but also someone who has great length and athleticism. So he becomes a good defender and a solid block shot blocker already, with the versatile set of skills that he can deploy with this Magic team and fit, in my opinion, right in alongside Wendell Carter Jr. Or if you do bring back Mo Bamba, or, you know, there's been talk about the Magic throwing some money at DeAndre Ayton and restricted free agency. Maybe that happens. I think however you form your team there, Jabari Smith fits there right now, no clunkiness whatsoever, and can potentially grow even more into being a focal option for a squad.
So I am fully on board with drafting the best player available, regardless of fit. Right. Because when you're in a rebuild, you just want to stack talent. You want to get guys that are talented and hopefully catch lightning in the bottle and get a superstar. Do you think that Jabari, you're talking about him kind of unlocking some of the other guys on this team? And I agree with that because you talk the guards needing to have the ball in their hand. Jabari is a great catch and shoot guy. Do you feel like Jabari is the best player in this draft?
It's tough. I don't know if he is the – it's tough to say. I've seen days – I go back and forth between him, Chet, and even Paolo Banchero, where they look like, okay, you know, Chet, what he's able to do on both sides of the ball, you know, being able to bring the ball up the court, defensively hold down the fort, offensively score inside, shoot the three. I'm kind of unsure about the mid-range game, right? Paolo, living in the mid-range, able to facilitate a little bit too, do some more off the dribble, reminds you more of like a Michael Beasley, in my opinion, with some Julius Randle mixed in as well. But you worry about the defensive end, you worry about the motor a little bit. And then Jabari is someone who I love is just a dead-eye shooter, man. Like, his shot's so pure, he can pull up from deep, do it in transition, a great trailer big, a great in-between game as well. You worry about him finishing around the rim, dealing with some physicality, and then also just being consistent when it comes to taking maybe more than two dribbles, you know? But, like, when I look at Jabari, I just see someone who doesn't need, like, he, I think, is the better player because he doesn't need a team to be situated a certain type of way for him to be a good player. Like, he's going to be a great player no matter what team he goes to because of his role, like, because of what he does. Where Chet is going to be a great player as well, but some roles, let's say, I think Houston OKC might be better than Orlando, or Orlando better than OKC. Like, different areas will either elevate or mitigate his effectiveness, in my opinion. I think Jabari's game is just ready-made for whatever roster.
Gotcha. That's fair. So let's, before we jump into the second pick, OKC being on the clock, and I should have led with this. I'm getting a little bit out ahead of myself. I get excited sometime. I apologize. Your top five, and if you have more than five, for me, I think that the top four are pretty clear cut. And then there's kind of a log jam between a few people that could, you can mention at five. Who are your top five prospects in this draft?
So it's funny. Shout out to Fanspo. I did mine, and I'm still currently kind of working it out a little bit. In fact, I just made a change today. So it's funny that we're doing this. But my number one, obviously, is Jabari Smith Jr. My number two is Paolo Banchero. My number three is Chet Holmgren. My number four is Jaden Ivey. And my number five is Johnny Davis.
Okay. That is not a typical name that you hear at five. I respect that. I love Johnny Davis and his game. You know, I was talking about the logjam at five, and he wasn't even one that I really considered at that slot. But wow. You know, if you watch film on him, there's plenty of, you know, there's plenty of ammunition to place him in that argument. For me, my top four, same four guys, different order. I think Chet is the best prospect in this draft. I don't know. Again, I like drafting the best player available fit wise. I don't know if he's the best fit in Orlando, but I think that I take him number one. So Chet one, I like Jaden Ivey two, Jabari three, and then Banchero four. And then at five, Keegan Murray is a guy that I really like there. Shaedon Sharpe has been getting a lot of talk. My concern with Shaedon Sharpe is his camp. You go back to the draft when the Kings took Marvin Bagley, and there were concerns about the people that were around Marvin Bagley, and that ended up causing an issue between him and the franchise. That seemed to always be in the media, always there was always talk from that. And Shaedon Sharpe has kind of had he's had a similar situation, and he went to Kentucky, but he didn't play. And then people in his camp were telling him, don't scrimmage, don't do anything in the combine. And so the last time that we saw any type of basketball from Sharpe is at the prep level. It was elite. He's an explosive athlete. He can shoot the ball. He's got a nice sidestep gather to, you know, to the jumper. He can handle the ball very well. Got a lot of tools. And you see that at that prep level. But you have to wonder, is that going to translate? Are you going to see him playing at the NBA level without playing at the college level? So maybe it's there. I think elite athleticism tends to transfer into the NBA. And so I think he'll be fine in that aspect of it, but I definitely have concerns with him. But another guy that I like is Benedict Mathurin out of Arizona, man. I just think that I like his skill set, and right now, because of what I've seen from him, I think that I have him over Sharpe in this draft. If I'm a GM and I'm looking at question marks, I think that he has fewer than Sharpe.
No, that makes sense. I love Ben. I have Ben Mathurin in between my 5 and 10 range. I think that you have someone who's going to come in off the bat and be an immediately great shooter, a great defender, fill position of need between that shooting guard, small four, that swingman position. I definitely like him. Shaedon Sharpe made an excellent point about his camp. There's just so many questions surrounding that. And also, like, there's a difference between high school and college in competition, much less between college and the pros, right? We have nothing at all on him in college. So we're taking the jump straight from high school to pros. And is that okay? If that's the case, look at other players who jump straight from high school historically. That's what I do, at least. And then look at Shaedon Sharpe. And do I see, like, oh my gosh, this amazing can't-miss talent? Not really. I see a guy who's very solid, has an intriguing physical profile, but I like to see more. And it's like, nope, can't see anymore. Just got to trust it. Well, I don't, you know, yeah. Like, that's how I am on that. So, like, he's actually further down my board because, like, if you're a team that, hey, why not, like, let's take a chance on him type thing, you can afford to have that luxury, then fine. But if I'm in the lottery, like, I'm in here for a reason, you know what I mean? More often than not, I'm not a team like the Warriors in 2020 who just had some bad injuries and, you know, we'll be right back at it next year once our guys get back. More than likely, I'm a team that's been here before. You know, I'm not a stranger to the lottery process. And I need to figure out how to get that guy that's going to make sure I'm not here anymore. And instead, I'm getting a mystery box that could be a thing of chocolates, could be a box of turds. I won't know. And that's Shaedon Sharpe right now.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think anytime that you look at the lottery, it's very, very hard to look back on the history and be like, this guy is a lot guaranteed going to be a value if you take him here. There's very few guys over the history of the draft that you can look back and say that. They are out there. I'm not saying that it hasn't happened, but there seems to always be a risk. If I'm a GM, I want to take the guy with the lowest risk. So now that we went through kind of our top five or six guys here, now we're going to go to pick number two. Oklahoma City Thunder, you're on the clock. Jabari Smith is off the board because you took him number one with the Magic. Who's going? Who's the fit in OKC? Who's going number two?
So I really want to, in my personal mock or big board, I have Paolo Banchero. But this seems like something where Chet Holmgren is the perfect fit just with how OKC has gone with talent that can perform, but also like their upside. Like if they become the best version of themselves, they're going to be a monster. You have someone in Chet who, you know, with his physical profile is certainly intriguing, but someone who we've seen what he can do on the defensive side of the ball, just no question. We've seen he's doing offensively, being able to shoot the ball, being a solid passer, having the reach that he does, fluid shot motion, a good pick and pop game. But when you're 7'1 and a 7'6 wingspan and you feel position in need for the Thunder, who don't really have that big man position locked up, you need someone who's going to play off of your Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and your Josh Giddey. And I think that you get Chet Holmgren, and he's the perfect guy to do that.
So my question to you, there's been concerns because of Chet's frame, and rightfully so. You know, he's 7 foot, 7'1". Anyways, like a buck 90, right? So he's a walking stick. Oklahoma City doesn't have a big physical four to play beside him. Is that concerning to you? Do you think that the frame and the lack of bulk on Chet Holmgren is going to cause issues for him in the league?
So in a vacuum, I could be concerned. Like just on its own, I would worry because like, oh, you know, who's going to take the brunt of the banging that will not be Chet Holmgren. But then you have to remember, you know, that, of course, I know you know, that the Thunder have the pick at 12 as well. And at 12, you know, more than likely Mark Williams is on the board. Very possibly Jalen Duren is on the board. If you want to fulfill, you know, that profile, your quintessential, what is the word I'm looking for? Your, not prototype, stereotypical, like your classic rim rolling banging five, right? Mm-hmm. Those two fit that to a degree, to a T. I think Duren, you have some untapped potential because he does show some increased passing. Don't like his jump shot, but he seems to like it, and it goes in every once in a while. So maybe you can refine that. OKC is a perfect sandbox to explore that. But because of his untapped potential being only 18 and looking like an Adonis, he could go much sooner than that. A Mark Williams, though, will probably be around there, and he's a guy who knows his role, will play it well, and I think can take on those tougher assignments. If you want to do like a freak lineup where Mark Williams plays the five, you slide Chet Holmgren more to the four, and then, you know, between Shai, Josh Giddey, get a three, that's an interesting kind of funky five for the OKC Thunder. So I would probably look to, if I draft Chet, then know that, yes, you know, I do need to bring another bigger big to absorb some of the more physical fives, you know, your Nikola Jokic's, your Joel Embiid's, but I can either do that, you know, eight picks later with my next pick, or, you know, sign one up in free agency.
Can you imagine the length, like the guys that you just mentioned, if they take, let's say they take Williams at 12. And so you got SGA, Giddey, Poku at the three, Chet at the four, and Williams at the five. That lineup is going to be extremely long, a lot of length there, a lot of playmaking as well. You know, you got four guys and Williams, I think, could possibly be a decent playmaker at the five, but in that lineup, you're not worried about his playmaking skills because you have four other guys that can definitely do that at an elite level.
Yep, I agree. That'd be very, yeah, that'd be just gnarly. That's the word I'm gonna say for right now, gnarly.
So we'll move it on. Pick number three, the Houston Rockets. And this is probably the most intriguing to me. And I know a lot of people are going to lean toward Banchero here, but I would really love to see them pair Jaden Ivey with Jalen Green.
Interesting. Okay. All right. I like that. But if you're doing that, do you see a future with an extension eligible Kevin Porter Jr.? Do you see him maybe going to a three as a playmaking three? Do you not see him as part of the future of this team? Like, if you do that, then fine. Yeah, I definitely like this backcourt of future. Except if you're Houston, you've been more or less unofficially or officially touting Porter and Green as the backcourt of the future.
So, do you think you've been kind of, digging into this draft class and look at these prospects? Do you feel like Kevin Porter Jr. has the upside that Jaden Ivey has?
Absolutely not, but I don't know if I would. I don't think he has the upside that Jaden Ivey has. No, I think Jaden Ivey physically is just going to be so much faster, just a better overall player. What I am concerned about is if you're going to do that fit with Ivey and Jalen Green, you bring another guy. Both those guys can do on ball or off ball. Jaden Ivey's shot, I'm not totally convinced on. Like, he shot way better this past year, but consistently, like, is he someone who's going to have to be on ball all the time? And if so, are you willing to say, hey, we don't need the services of Kevin Porter Jr., someone who has been solid, is still improving, and also I think is just a really I think he's a player who could fit on this team still. There you go. I think he fits this timeline well still. Even if
Yeah,
he's not the backcourt
definitely.
of the future, if I'm bringing an Ivy, like, am I prepared to adjust the role for Porter Jr.?
And that's something they absolutely have to consider. But if I'm a GM, I'm not going to let Kevin Porter Jr. being on my roster stop me from going out and getting a guy,
Yeah, that's true.
at the caliber. And now you can look at it in a different light, and the fact that, they can not draft Jaden Ivey and take Banchero there, and Banchero is a position of need for them, and so then they don't have that issue. But to me, one of the biggest concerns for Banchero is his defense. Is he going to be able to be a serviceable defender at the NBA level? And if you're not convinced that that he's going to be able to do that, I don't know that taking him at three is it. I think that, where he lands is going to be crucial for his development. He needs to be around a coach that is defensive minded. And that's why, to me, I would like to see Banchero go four to the Kings. And I know that seems kind of crazy, but I like Mike Brown. He's a defensive minded guy, and I think that would be great for Banchero and his development.
No, that's really interesting. I mean, I like the possible fit of having Banchero in Houston because I think that defensively, like, they all gotta figure that out. You know what I mean? Like, that's something that it's not just on let me try. I can't think here. It's not just on Banchero to figure out defensively. Like, Jalen Green can definitely improve defensively in that area. So, of course, can Kevin Porter Jr. and literally every Houston Rocket, Alperen Şengün, Josh Christopher, who's already pretty solid. Like, only guy who maybe I'd say doesn't have to, at least in terms of being an adequate defender out the gate, would be, well, I'm trying to think of the player now. Of course, my brain goes away and
DeShante.
thinking, there you go, Jay Shante, thank you. And even he can improve as well. But, like, that's what you're looking at there. Where if you're Popalo, now you got a guy who, okay, let's go. Kevin Porter's still trying to figure out learning to be more of a distributing kind of guard who can finish, score all three levels. Jalen Green, same thing. You have these two kind of heliocentric offensive players who could take turns running the team. You could stagger them, whatever the case may be. Then you got a guy in Paolo Banchero who can soak up so much usage as the main offensive hub. Yet another offensive weapon that you can use to diversify the Rockets' attack, kind of grow with this group as well. And someone else who can also pass the ball. Now you don't have one main point guard. You got three guys who can score and distribute the ball at like a B plus to A minus level evenly between Green, Porter, and Banchero. And defensively, yes, that's an issue for sure, but that'd be an issue for all three of them. Like that comes with, maturing you know, the coaching staff leveling up in terms of their philosophies and really gelling this team together. So I do like Bancaro in Houston, but I also see and understand where you're coming from as well with maybe having him slip a little further, because your concerns are still very much like valid.
Yeah, and that is, you know, I've not heard anything out of Houston camp that Jaden Ivey is even on the board. You know, there was kind of some leaks of Jaden Ivey. He was talking about Jalen Green. And of course, you see something like that, social media is going to run with it. But, you know, nothing official that you're going to see Jaden Ivey go over Vanchero at the three spot. But I don't think that the separation in talent, I think a lot of times when people are looking at the top of this draft, they're saying the top three and then Jaden Ivey. And in my opinion, Jaden Ivey is right there with any of them. That is, outside of Sacramento, I think in the Sacramento and the Magic being in the top four, if anybody else, hold on, I had it written down. It was, so if you look at the entire lottery, the way that it's laid out, the way that the picks fell, there's only a couple teams that you really could make an argument to go out and take Jaden Ivey.
Mm-hmm.
And
true.
So I'm sorry, I'm a little bit behind here, but
Guys who like, yeah, you saying teams that would make that Jaden Ivey would fit in with?
Yeah, so you look at the top 14 teams, right? And so Orlando's loaded at the guard, so you know that Jaden Ivey is not going to be an option there, or he's not likely to be an option there because they have a lot of promising young guards. Oklahoma City with you can actually make a case there because of Josh Giddey's size. You can play him at the three, but it's less likely that he goes to Oklahoma City. And then Sacramento, because they just traded Tyrese Halliburton, I find it hard to believe that they're going to go out and draft another guard that is not, you know, Halliburton was big enough that you could have arguably played him at the three. He would have been undersized and the matchup would have been tough against some guys. But they just moved off of him because they have De'Aaron Fox and Davion Mitchell. And so you run through the rest of these teams in the top 14, and the only other team that you see in the top 14 that you could maybe make a case to not draft Jaden Ivey would be the Charlotte Hornets. But because of his talent, I think that him being paired with LaMelo Ball would be ridiculous. That'd be a crazy good pairing because Jaden Ivey has shown that he's capable of playing without the ball in his hands. Is he going to be able to do that? Is he going to be as elite without the ball in his hands as he is with the ball in his hands? I don't know, that like, that's still something that you can discuss, but I believe that he definitely could be.
That's interesting. I mean, I think that Jaden going to Sacramento, listen, it's going to be hard to put logic to Sacramento and their team building process because they haven't used it. You know what I mean? Like in terms of how they built this team so far, I could totally see them taking Jaden Ivey. Totally see them saying, hey, you know, we need best player available or we need fit, whatever the case may be, whether or not they should. Now, and that's the problem, like you said, whether or not they should is the issue. But I don't think I like Jaden Ivey's fit in Sacramento for the same reason that I didn't like his possible fit in Houston. That's like Jaden Ivey is a much better shooter this past year, but it's still an iffy shooter. Mm-hmm. And so like, do you want to have three players in Sacramento? You know, one starting point guard, one backup guard, and one guy is going to play the two, since none of them can really play the three, right? And all of them being shaky shooters. Like, that sounds like a match made in, well, Sacramento. You know what I mean? So like,
that sounds like a Kings thing to do for sure.
Exactly. And it's like, yes, the talent of Ivy would still be there, but now you are decreasing all three of these guys and the talent that they bring to the table because they're all in a spot that is less adequate for them to succeed. Like, it's not set up for them to succeed, you know? Now you have all three either playing off the ball or relying on a shaky shot to hopefully, you know, carry them through when they're playing off ball. Or you're looking at one guy holding the ball and the other two sitting around because there's not a creative enough system in the world, I think, to get all those guys to flourish, all being, you know, 6'4 and under, and trying to find the minutes for all three. And one of them having to play the two guard when none of them are traditionally twos.
I have a little more confidence in Jaden Ivey's shot than you do, I guess.
I like it. Uh-huh.
I get where you're coming from with it, right? Because you got 1 year, and he showed a pretty big improvement coming. You know, he was not a one and done guy. You can say that about him. He was not a guy that after his freshman year that he could have went into the draft and you would have been confident in. But you see a massive leap from him coming out of this year too. So, you know, I think just because of the work that, like, the improvement you see, you know, he goes from shooting 4 threes a game in his freshman year at 26%. He's shooting 5 threes his sophomore year at a 36% clip. So, you know, you get a 10% increase from that and you wonder, is it fool's gold? Is he going to regress? Is he going to continue to improve? What's going to happen with him? And I believe that you will see, I think he's closer to the 36% from 3-point shooter than he is the 26% from 3-point shooter. So that's something. It's still not a great fit in Sacramento at all, but I would hate to see them take a chance on somebody just because of fit. I'd rather them honestly trade the pick, you know, like package that pick and go on like somebody else, like Harrison Barnes is a bad contract for him, you know, move the pick, put, you know, pair it with Barnes and move him to go get something else or whatever. I don't think it's likely that you see them move off of the pick, but I just don't know what that's going to look like in Sacramento with Jaden Ivey, De'Aaron Fox, and Davion Mitchell.
No, I agree. You make an excellent point. That's going to be, yeah, it's funky. That's probably the best way to put it. It's funky at best. And I just don't know. I think that you put Mike Brown in a heck of a sad situation having tried to make that happen. It just, I wouldn't put that for an offensive genius, much less for Mike Brown, who defensively is great, but again, undersized guards. And you're right, with the shooting thought on Ivy, I am a little lower on it, but like even if it was higher, I'm still concerned, but much less so given where they're at, you know?
Yeah, and I think Davion Mitchell, I won't say that he has an inability to play off ball, but you saw it this year when people went down, the trade happened, and he was running the offense. He looked like an offensive threat when he had the ball in his hands.
Yes.
The times when he was not playing with the ball in his hands, it's like, man, it doesn't really look like he is an offensive threat. And so something Jaden Ivey is definitely better in that aspect. He can play without the ball in his hands. Can De'Aaron Fox, can Davion Mitchell, and we've yet to see that happen. So you say Banchero to the Rockets at 3, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you think the Kings are going Ivy?
I don't think they should, but I think they would. Or Shaedon Sharpe. It wouldn't surprise me they went for Shaedon Sharpe there. Again, the ideal fit for me for Sacramento would be Keegan Murray.
Yeah.
Keegan Murray, you know, a guy who he fills position need as a forward. Probably not a position need. They really need threes. This is where, ideally, I'd probably put Benedict Mathurin. I just don't think he's going to jump so high. But Bender Mathurin, as someone who, you know, is 6'6", could swing between the two and the three. They need threes and not so much fours, where you still have Harrison Barnes. To a lesser extent, you still have Mo Harkless. Like, you have other guys that can fill that spot, per se. Mm-hmm. But if you are just selecting best player of the draft, you know, best player available, Keegan Murray, great shooter, solid all-around offensive player, good defensive guy. Like, he fits right in. He knows his role. He could be right in Sacramento as that 3-4 kind of hybrid player. You could probably play three, him and Harrison Barnes as that, like, duo kind of forward spot position. Which, again, would then lead you to number 5. And with that is where I think Jaden Ivey would fall.
You feel like he's a good fit in Detroit?
I do.
I think that is a pretty strong backcourt. You know, Jaden Ivey and Cade, man, that is, you can put the ball in either one of their hands. They're both going to be good decision makers. We got to see Cade really turning on the second half of the season. He kind of stumbled a little bit out of the gate last year and came on late. So I think that coming into year two, he's going to be much better. I like the coach in Detroit. They've got a lot of stuff that you wonder what's going to happen. Like, there's talks, is Jeremy Grant still going to be on that team? Are they going to move him? Is that something, you know, like, are the Kings going, are they wanting to win now, right? Because they go out, they get a guy, they make the move, they get rid of Halliburton, they bring in Sabonis, and it's like, okay, that's great. You kind of, you've got a direction of which way you're going. But if you don't prove to this guy that you're wanting to win and he's wanting to win, are you going to keep him around? Because this could be a really, really expensive rental for the Kings. So do you think there's any possibility that you see maybe some sort of pick swap, something happening there between the Kings and the Pistons?
It's possible. I think that you're right. It would fill a position of need for both in regards to, hey, where we're at right now is not the ideal situation for us to flourish, but like, you have a need here, I have a need here, let's kind of scratch each other's back in that way. I think that'd be the ideal thing to do. I don't want to jump on and say it would happen or not, of course, without knowing, but like, that would be where I would tend to lean. Yeah, that's right. When you get to that 4 or 5 already, then again with 7 and later on, like, these are picks I think are most certainly going to be traded, because you're going to find players at these picks who either don't need these types of players or could get something back for trading back a little bit, or whatever the case may be, maybe for a win now player off the top, whether that's, you know, Portland with Jeremy Grant, or, you know, another team with a possible John Collins, whatever the case may be there.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces that can move, and that's, you know, the Kings got to move up. That's very fortunate for them. They really just caught some bad luck getting the 4th pick, honestly, because of the guys that are there. And maybe it's not. Maybe we get to draft night and a guy like Banchero or a guy like Chet falls to 4. I don't think that's likely. I think the top 3 in some way, shape, or form is going to be Chet, Jabari, and Banchero. And then, you know, at 4, go with whoever is there, whoever you think. But it's going to be interesting. It wouldn't surprise me to see like 4 through 8 really kind of swap up, and you see teams kind of jockeying for position there, because Indiana is in a very interesting situation. Are they going to completely lean into the tank with Rick Carlisle coming in as their head coach? Is he a guy that's going to be okay fully leaning into a tank? And if that's the case, are they going to move some of these contracts to try and get other picks or younger players? There's a lot there. Portland, is Dame Lillard going, you know, are they going to be happy with that 7 pick? Are they going to try and package that 7 pick and go out and get somebody else? Lots of, you know, I'm not going to speculate a ton, but there's a lot of teams that have pieces that they can move. New Orleans have some young guys that if they wanted a package with this 8th pick, maybe they can package those and jump up to 4. You know, is Trey Murphy and pick number 8 enough to move them up to 4? You know,
exactly.
You know, like that is something, because what do they need? Yeah, they went out and they got CJ McCollum, but point guard is their position of need. And whenever you get to the 8th pick, I don't know who's going to be on the board as a guard that they would go after. You know, you're probably looking at more of a shooting guard type as opposed to a point guard, because I would say point guard after Jaden Ivey, the next best available point guard is who, maybe Ty?
Ty, and I think he slips more toward the back, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't see New Orleans taking him that high in the lottery. So, you know, I always enjoy the offseason. I enjoy watching these GMs kind of make moves and shock you. You know, the trade between the Pelicans and the Grizzlies last offseason was huge, kind of shook things up. So I think we see a lot more of that this season than what we did last season. So before I let you out of here, we kind of went through our top 5 there. I'm not going to run through the entire lottery, although I would definitely be interested to see where the rest of your picks fall there. Let's talk about some guys that the Grizzlies have picks at 22 and 29. Isaac and I and Candace, we've talked about this. We don't expect the Grizzlies to execute all 3 of their picks this year. We expect them to make some sort of move. But who do you like in that 22 to 29 range? Can you name a few guys that you like as far as a fit for the Grizzlies?
Yeah, I think that Patrick Baldwin would be one. That he had a really rough year this past year playing for his dad in Milwaukee. But at 6'9", good size for his position, a 6'11 wingspan, really nice jump shot, really good mechanics on that shot. He didn't shoot it well, mind you, in college, but I think a lot of that was also the talent he was with or lack thereof, and the fact that he was kind of being kind of shoehorned into being a number one option that he's not, you know? With that being said, I think he's athletic, he's skilled, has a good basketball IQ, should be a decent shooter from deep, can post up smaller players, good from the corner, from three, and I think it's gonna be great, just benefiting from the gravity of a Ja Morant, you know, and someone who I think in the right position it can be a decent defender too, good at picking up steals and blocks. I like a player like a Patrick Baldwin as a wing, especially considering the free agency status of Kyle Anderson coming up and whether or not you retain him, and for you know, if so, how much, whatever the case may be there. Another one I think is really cool in that same kind of vein is Marjon Beauchamp. Looking at him, a wing from the G League Ignite, 6'6", you know, just under 200 pounds, but he's someone who is active, someone who can crash the boards. Very athletic, a skilled guy who is still working on a shot, you know, but he excels already at scoring on off ball plays, which is great. Just kind of, you know, benefiting from action. Decent for the mid range, a nice rebounder. Another guy who's good at, you know, getting steals and blocks. He's not a timeless because he doesn't even improve his 3-point shooting. Not a great ball handler, and sometimes can be too like focused on scoring, I think, but like. You see the hustle and the energy that he brings to the table. You look at his wingspan, his lateral quickness, and I just think that you gotta like what you see there. And then my last guy, and I don't know if he's like a perfect fit on this squad, but I just love this dude. And he should be in that area. It would be Jaden Hardy. Hardy, I think, is a really solid shooting guard. Had a really or combo guard rather. He had a really decent year in G League Ignite. Didn't shoot the three ball well, just around 30%. But he's someone whose mechanics looked really solid. And again, just given where he was playing, the role he had was maybe a lot for him. It'll be a lot better in a smaller usage role. Someone who could put points in a hurry. You know, scored all three levels, gets the rim, needs to work a little bit better on doing that. Can play a little too wily over there, kind of throw the ball up in that way. But mid-range shooting, creating space, knocking down the three, a decent playmaker as well. You know, didn't really make a whole lot of exceptional reads, but I really liked the way he found the role, man. You know, consistent on pick and roll play. So, you know, as a secondary guy to at least get you in your offense and make a basic action, whether that's scoring for myself or setting up, you know, one of your rolling bigs, I think that Jaden Hardy is a good player there as well. And on the defensive end of the ball, another guy who I think all three of these guys are kind of understated on the defensive end. But Hardy, especially, I like the fact that he, you know, definitely tries on that end and does a good job getting steals. And the athlete that he is, it fits right in with what y'all got going on in Memphis.
Yeah, I think Beauchamp is probably the best defender out of the three, honestly. I think
Absolutely.
that, like, his point of attack defense is very strong. And we've actually talked about all three of those guys at one point or another on the show. So, you know, I was comfortable when you shot me those three names. I'm like, man, first, Patrick Baldwin Jr., that's my dude. I've loved him, like, going back, watching his high school film. And the, you know, the decision to go where his dad was coaching, that's something. You know, maybe it's going to come back to body, maybe not. Maybe, you know, before he goes there, there's talks of him being a lottery type talent. Then he struggles. He has an injury to the ankle. And so now there's questions. Is he going to be healthy? Is he going to stay healthy? Is this a fluke year? What's going to happen with him? I don't think that you lose that talent. Like, he goes, it was a tough situation. He had a bad year. But that talent that had him as a projected lottery player is still there. Like, that did not go away. And he was healthy at the combine. He looked good. His shuttle run looked good. He would, you know, he was playing on that ankle and going. And so I really like him a lot. I have made a promise to myself that I was not going to fall in love with players in this draft and get heartbroken like I did last year when the Grizzlies took Zaire over Moses Moody and James Bouknight. But you know, I have just, like, he is a guy. From the minute I started looking at this class, he is a guy that I liked. I didn't think the Grizzlies would have a chance to get him. And now I think they do. I don't see him in mock drafts going very high. I see him going sometimes right in front of the Grizzlies in the 19 to 20 range. Sometimes I think one that I looked at today, he was going in the second round, which I think is just asinine. Like, I can't imagine that they're going to let that kind of talent fall into the second round. So really like all three of those guys. And the Jaden Hardy and his 3-point shooting, the one thing, and I've got to give our guy Will Harris some credit here. that three-point shooting in the G League is from the NBA three-point line. And so the three-point, a 33 to 36% three-point shooter at the college level, as opposed to a guy that goes straight out of high school playing against grown men in the G League, shooting NBA threes, I'm not afraid of that 30%. I think that that only goes up from there, as to where there's no telling if a guy is going to be able to translate. And maybe I'm kind of, you know, contradicting myself, because I said I had faith in Jaden Ivey after he had that jump, and he's just playing at the collegiate level and not at the NBA level. But I think the level of talent there is different between those two guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's going to be interesting regardless, but I do like, yeah, some of those takes. Listen, I don't, that's why I don't do a whole lot. Oh, this guy's a second round player. Like, if they don't fit, clearly fit in like the first, like the lottery, then to me, it's late first, second. It's not until I mock it out that I really have, because then I have to make those tough decisions. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah, that for me, I think I'm right on with your observations there. And I think it's interesting, again, given out, we have some mystery here. This draft is a different one. You know, there's three guys who stand out, but there's not that one guy who's like, yeah, easy. There's no Zion. There's no, you know, Anthony Edwards type guy. I mean, even Anthony, you know, there's none of those kind of guys that like, okay, I take him, that's it, and then we go from there. I think a few people have just very good, very compelling arguments. And, you know, where you guys are, where the Grizzlies are going to, they're sitting pretty. Because, you know, you guys can look, you guys have done an amazing job drafting. You guys will find value at your position, you know, at your position of need there. And the guys that are mocked there, I mean, any of those guys, I think, will be solid. Obviously, some fit better than others. But either way, if there's one thing Memphis done well, it's ascertaining, you know, young talent. So feel really good about whoever they pick in this area.
Yeah, and for me, they don't have to hit a home run. This is not – whoever they draft this year, this is not a guy that has to come in and get rotation minutes. They are a team – Zach Kleiman said in the offseason that – are, and actually at the end of the – when they got eliminated, he said that they are going to put themselves in the best position to win it all. And so they can draft the guy and send him down to South Haven and give him some time to develop. And that's why I like Patrick Baldwin Jr. so much. Because of his level of talent, if you get him, you send him down to South Haven, you let him go down there and continue to develop, get used to that range. And in a year or two, say you sign Kyle Anderson because you're trying to make that run, and he ends up, you end up winning the championship. Well, then when Kyle leaves in free agency in a couple of years after you sign him to that, you got Patrick Baldwin Jr. that's coming up from the G League that could very well just step into that place and give you a much better Kyle Anderson. Yeah, I don't know that he's going to be the defender that Kyle is. Kyle is an excellent defender. I don't think he gets enough credit for how good of a defender he actually is. But, you know, this is a guy that would come in like a plug-and-play replacement for him. So they're in a great spot. It's a great spot to be as a fan, because you can, you know, put trust in this front office. They've done a fantastic job in everything that they've done so far. You know, you can say the Justice Winslow thing was kind of a miss, but outside of that,
a little bit,
you know, like Kleiman is not really missed whenever it comes to his decisions. And so I'm happy to sit back and relax and watch them work their magic throughout this off season. So, man, I don't have much of anything else. Do you got anything else you want to go over before you get out of here?
Nah, man, this has been fun. I this solid episode. I enjoyed it. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see kind of how we keep evaluating these guys and making mocks and going on, you know, as we get closer and closer to actual draft day, which is just going to be like Christmas morning, but aside from actual NBA Christmas morning. But no, man, I'm just so grateful that you had me on. I really do appreciate it. And thanks a lot, David. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. Let everybody know where they can find you and what all work you're doing. I am most interested in, you're doing a Phoenix Mercury podcast. Is that correct?
Yes. It's, I work with basically the All City, I guess podcast network or All City group. So it's PHNX. So they do all sports, right? You know, everything, is like DNVR and CHGO, Chicago and Denver. Now we have Phoenix. So, we have great people, you know, doing everything from the Suns and Diamondbacks and Cardinals, all of that. And so I am the host of the live show/podcast of the PHNX Mercury Show. And so every week, all things Mercury. And I have an amazing group. We have a co-host, Aaliyah. I have a producer, Mallory, and we have a writer on our team as well, Aya. And so every week is content on the Mercury. Watch the games. I'm not the best tweeter during games. I really just like to focus on the game, so my tweets are never really the most riveting. But then we recap, and that, you know, that every week, on a Wednesday or Thursday, we recap what we liked, what we didn't like. We nominate the Mercury Player of the Week and Hustle Player of the Week, and then we preview the week's games coming up. So a really good way to kind of keep track of the Mercury of folks who are also big fans of that. If you are a big fan of obviously the Mercury or just WNBA basketball or just basketball in general, that's where I fall. I highly recommend it. Yeah, but check us out on Twitter at @PHNX_Mercury, and you'll see all of our stuff there.
So Phoenix is actually struggling out of the gate after making some moves offseason.
I didn't need this. I need this, David. No,
but listen, I think that they've got a lot going on, right? You have got to think the situation with Brittany Griner is weighing on that locker room, right? They don't know when they're going to get her back. They don't know when they're going to get her home. What kind of condition is she going to be in? Is she safe over there? There's a lot of questions whenever it comes to that situation. And so this team is way better than their 3-8 record right now. And I hate to put you on the spot. I'm not trying to beat you over the head with it, but do you agree? Do you think that this team is way better than this 3-8 record?
I do. And I don't, I think that, like, here's the thing. I think so. Because, like, they played today and they beat the Sparks, and the effort they gave was great. You know what I mean? The way they were able to, you know, stay active, stay engaged, and fight back in the third quarter, which has been hard for them, has been great for them. On the other hand, you look at what their issues are. Right now, offensively, they can be way better. They were 10th in offensive rating and 10th in defensive rating out of 12 last week, right? Offensively, they can be much better than that. Like, Diana Taurasi was shooting just 30% on her threes. That's the worst she shot from three in her career, if you take out the six games she played in 2019, where she had bad heels and was basically barely able to shoot the ball at all, you know. But then you look at Tina Charles shooting sub 30% from three. You look at Skylar Diggins-Smith, who was out for a bit. Of course, Kia Nurse defensively a great hit. She was out. Diamond DeShields offensively great hit, defensively solid player, but not a good shooter. So I knew there was nowhere to go but up on the offensive end for the Mercury. Now, defensively, that's where the issue lies. Because, again, Diana Taurasi at 40, you know, like, what she's able to do on the floor in general is great. But if you're a quick guard, you're going to get what you want. You know what I mean? Right. If you're a solid post player, she's feisty down there, and she'll get some slaps on the ball and some slaps that aren't on the ball that she won't get caught for fouls. But, like, she's not the best defender there. Skylar Diggins-Smith is someone who is a great, like, individual defender but kind of gets lost in team concept. I would say the same for Diamond DeShields, who's an okay defender. And then after that, like, Tina Charles, like, no one's ever mistaken her, you know, for a shout out to old school Rebecca Brunson or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have the best defensive personnel on the team. And so I do worry that that's probably as good as it's going to get for the Mercury on that side of the floor. So,
you don't 3-8, think that, no. Like, BG coming back, getting into shape, you don't think that her defense help sure that up any at all?
Oh, I 100% do. I guess I just can't. The problem is, and this is just where I'm at, I don't think that she will be coming on.
Gotcha.
I don't think that she will be back this year. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and nor should I expect that, you know, obviously you'd want that. I would as well, like 100%. Like, you know, this team obviously was built around Brittany Griner, you know, with her in mind, and not having her on a human level is horrific. On a basketball level, just, you know, not nearly as bad, but also bad. But yeah, I've just come to think that we're just not going to have her back. Same with Kia Nurse, who's been out with the ACL injury since last year. She'll probably be back more toward the late end of the year, but for all intents and purposes, you know, even then, like, she's still, like, she's out. You know what I mean? When she comes back, but until she's back, she's out. So it's just difficult to kind of see how we fight. I just want the effort to be there more for the Mercury.
Gotcha. Well, man, I appreciate the heck out of you taking time out of your day to come on with me. We got a little NBA draft talk in, some W talk in as well. Love it. I can't say that I love what I'm seeing for my team. I think that after the offseason moves, I was expecting the Liberty to be much better than 3-8, but it's just not, man. I feel like they need a point guard. I love Sabrina, but I think that she is better off the ball. And so it's don't know. It's a struggle over there. So I will let you get out of here. We will wrap the show up. You can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I'm at DavidW2111. Corbin, what's your at, man? And then we will get out of here.
Yeah, man. I just want to say once again, man, it's always a pleasure talking hoops with you in general. Like, you know, you're a good friend of mine, someone that helped me out immensely and still do. So thank you. But you can find me on Twitter at CorbinNBA. And yeah, man, let's do this again sometime. I got to get you on the round ball round.
I can do it, man.
Love it, bro.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.